The Empowerment Trap. This is Burnout Truth number 17. The Empowerment Trap is what we're talking about in this week's Burnoutology, the podcast. So the Empowerment Trap, what does it really mean? This is convincing yourself that it's your job to fix what broke you. This one's definitely me. This whole episode may be quite a cathartic one for me in terms of where we go. The Empowerment Trap, what it really means is convincing yourself that it's your job to fix what broke you. How to spot it is we're like, maybe I manifested this. Maybe I created it. What am I the one, you know, what am I doing wrong? And why it matters is because you're not broken. Even burnout doesn't break you. You're not broken. You don't need fixing, but the system is broken. So the Empowerment Trap is what we're talking about in this week's episode of Burnoutology, the podcast. Whether you're new or whether you are one of my fabulous returning listeners, Burnoutology, the podcast, is uncut, unedited, unscripted. So you might get noise, sounds, dog barking, pauses, lots of noise. Recording quality might not be great. I'm on a new mic today. I don't know what it's doing. I did have a note from one of you to say, can you record it in stereo? I've been recording in stereo. Hopefully it's making a difference for you. So apparently you can listen to me out of two ears. I need to have a look. I haven't asked the question, but hopefully that's all resolved for you now. But it is uncut, unedited, unscripted. You get it as is. This was my permission slip to let go of perfection, to let go of thinking that I needed perfect formatting, perfect sponsorship, perfect jingles, perfect cuts, that I needed to do everything in order for this message to be perfect. And it is as it is, right? It's perfectly imperfect just the way it is. But that does mean that you get, it is like for me a bit, it is a weekly brain dump, which probably thinks you could put more effort into it than that, Kelly. But that's where I go with it. It's literally, it's not overthinking this stuff. I literally just have the title of what it is that I'm going to talk to you about today. And that's where we go. So you really are getting it raw, uncut, unedited, unscripted. As I said, that might give you some oohs, ahs, pauses, errors, repeating, repetition. But you get it what it is. For the hundreds of you that keep listening to this every single week, thank you so much. It really does mean a lot. For the messages that you keep sending me, thank you. I'm not responding at the moment. I'm not officially back at work until the 17th of November. I had to think about that. Then 17th of November is when I'm back. That's the day that I will be launching this year's Master Burnout Coach. So we start on the 17th of November, which I'm very excited about. That's going to be my first day back. And I feel very, very good about it. But today we are going into the Empowerment Trap. And I see this, I've been this person, and I've seen it in so many of my clients. So I suppose after my first burnout, after the big crash, I had to have two operations in 48 hours. The physical toll of burnout was awful. Like, this was burnout number one. The physical signs had started. My body was quite literally just stopping working. I was, as we spoke about last week, right, I was stuck in this productivity cult. I was still so, so, so proud of myself that after 7 months of hospital admittances, not once had I taken a day off work. Right, I'd properly fallen into that, right, because my worth was attached to how busy I was. Resting was absolutely attached to guilt. And I thought that, you know, if I was going to be a great leader, then I just needed to keep on going. I also now know the neuroscience behind why stopping didn't even feel like an option for me. Again, we're going to be covering that in the Master Burnout Coach when we start on the 17th of November. If you've already bought Burnout 101, you'll know that we cover that in there too. If you haven't, Burnout 101 is my short online course, just five lessons that you can go through. So you'll find this stuff in lots of different, but you'll even find it in my book, right? The neuroscience behind why we kind of keep going. But I had these two operations in the July of 2013, two operations in 48 hours for two quite big health conditions that had been created as a result of the stress that my body was under. And I had a couple of weeks off after the operation. My body literally, I mean, really, it should have been months, but I had a couple of weeks off. And during that time, we already had a holiday booked. So we had a lovely all-inclusive family holiday to Rhodes. I've still got those pictures. That felt like one of the best. That was the first time that I'd ever, ever properly switched off on a holiday. What does that tell you as well? I was 30 to have been employed then by that point full-time, not including my little part-time jobs when I was at school. But up to that point, I'd been in full-time employment, having left my education, full-time employment for 15 years. Had my kids. I'd done, what had I done by that point? Two different degrees. That was the first time I'd ever properly switched off on holiday. I mean, that tells you something in itself, right? That's that productivity cult. That is rest equals guilt. That was the first one I'd ever had. Went back to work then after the holiday, thinking that I've recovered, right? Because I've recovered from these operations. Everything should now be fine. And I was absolutely convinced that the toxicity that was in that workplace, the toxicity that contributed, I didn't fully know at that point what I had experienced. Nobody was talking about burnout. I didn't know the signs, didn't understand what was happening. I just thought clearly whatever had been happening had been as a result of these illnesses, right? What I hadn't noticed was that what I hadn't known at that time, that point in time, was that the illnesses and the health conditions had been created because of burnout. There was a lot of unpicking that needed to be done by that point. But I did know that something needed to change. The biggest, even after 7 months of hospital admittances, the biggest gut punch was when I'm recovering from these operations. I spent a whole day watching chat shows. Like, I used to be able to get chat shows from like 5 a.m. until 5 a.m, right? They were on every single channel. Oprah, Ricky Lake, Geraldo. What else would there have been? Jeremy Kyle, Sally. Do you remember Sally? Oh, there were so many of them. I can't remember all of the names now, but there were so many. I can see all of them. Maury Povich. There were bloody hundreds of them, right? And sometimes back-to-back episodes. So I've had this day laying on the sofa watching daytime TV, and my son's come home from school and they look at me, tell they're terrified, right? And clearly I do not look healthy on this day. But my response to them, and again, this feeds into some of the productivity cult and some of the stuff we've been talking about over the last few episodes. But my immediate response to them was, don't worry, everything's going to be all right. Mum's going to be back at work soon. My sons looked at each other. They were 12 at the time. I've got twin sons. They were 12. They came and sat on the coffee table in front of me, looked at each other. And one of them then said to me, but we don't want you to go back to work, Mum, because your job's killing you. That was, even after 7 months of pain, that was the biggest gut punch, the most painful thing that I'd experienced over those last 7 months. And I knew they were right. I didn't know what to change, didn't necessarily know how to change it. And I was the HR director, right? I'd been headhunted to go and work in this organisation to change all the crap that needed fixing. But there was part of me that was like, I have to be the one to fix this. I have to be the one to stop anybody else getting to this point, right? I just need to stop it. And I remember going back in day one after this period of absence. I've gone back into work. And I also knew there was some, I needed to go back to myself. So I had, I suppose, this, if you like, this was the light bulb moment. That was the first moment that I suppose I understood the burnout equation. It took me a good few years after that to be able to name it and see it properly, because I kept seeing it in all of my clients. But I suppose that day was the conception, if you like, of the burnout equation. I knew that in that workplace, I had lost myself. I knew that I wasn't doing work, or I wasn't working in a way that was aligned to my values and who I am. I had begun to modify a lot of my behaviours, a lot of the ways that I was working to try and fit into this toxic workplace. That's what I knew. So I knew that stuff needed to change. And I knew that I needed to change. And so I'd promised myself that I was going to go back into this organisation and I was going to be me. And if that meant that people didn't like it, that was on them. I also, that I went and got all my hair cut off, cut all my hair off, bleached it blonde, cut all my hair off, got myself a new wardrobe. So I thought, I'm not even dressing like me anymore. I'm not looking like me. I'd begun to look like a corporate cutout of myself. So I thought, we're not doing this anymore. So I got some new glasses, cut all my hair off, bleached it blonde, new look, new clothes, walk into this organisation. And by lunchtime on day one, I was like, I do not belong here. I cannot fix this crap, right? It's so toxic. I can't do anything with it. And then I thought, you know what? I just need to. And it started. So I started to look for other jobs. And I was the main breadwinner in our house. So I couldn't just like walk away with nothing. Started to look for some other jobs. They all looked exactly the same. And it was whilst I was finishing off my executive coaching qualification that I heard myself say for the first time, I was going to start my own business. It was nothing to do with burnout. Burnout was the side hustle for many, many years. I was talking about it, learning about it, studying it. I wanted to understand what had happened to me. I was running sessions in and around it, but it wasn't like the bulk of my work. That wasn't what I was kind of doing. But the second time I kind of fell into this empowerment trap was then a couple of years later when I got the phone call to tell me that my replacement had died. So I'd left this organisation. My replacement was a woman that I'd worked alongside. She'd been successful in getting the job. And I got a phone call to say that she died, and she died in her room on her own whilst wearing a leadership residential. And I got a phone call 2 days after that, another phone call from somebody else in the organisation to tell me that I hadn't been the first or even the second or even the third director in my job to become seriously ill in that organisation. I'd become the fourth. And that was the second time that I fell into this empowerment trap, right? Convincing myself that it was my job to fix what broke me. So I remember reaching out at the time. So I was an HR director. I'd been recruited as the UK's youngest HR director, according to the sector, organisation of just over 4,000 people. I'm leading a team of 43. I'd been doing all this really incredible stuff. And then I'd become really ill. My replacement had died. I get a phone call that tells me I'm the fourth HR director. So yes, there was clearly something wrong within this organisation, but also what was wrong within the sector. So I reached out to the CIPD, the Chartered Institute of Personnel Development, the membership body for HR professionals. I reached out to them and I said, hey, what are you doing to support HR? Because four of us have become really seriously ill, one of us has died. What are you doing? What awareness are you doing? How are you helping your members? How are you helping us to get out of some of these toxic workplaces? And they just said to me, you need to contact your EAP. So your employee assistance provider. That's what they said to me. Contact your EAP. We don't do anything. And so this was the second time really that I fell into this empowerment trap, convincing myself that it was my job to fix what broke me. Because I thought then this isn't just a me thing. It wasn't just me that was broken. That was my biggest light bulb, Mike. It wasn't my fault that I'd gotten to this point. It was broken systems. It was a lack of support. It was a lack of us talking about this. Four of us have become really seriously ill, but nobody's given me any warning when I go into this place. My replacement died in her room on her own whilst away on a leadership residential. She went up to her room at night and just didn't wake up in the morning. Like, this isn't what should be happening. This needs fixing. This needs changing. So I began to take the learning that I've been doing over the last couple of years to really understand this. Some of the workshops I've done really, really upped that. And then I thought, well, it has to be my job to change all this stuff, right? I need to be the one to change it all. Because I'd fallen then into this trap, I thought it was my job to fix what had broken me. I thought that all of a sudden I needed to fix an entire sector. I needed to stop every single toxic workplace from being a toxic workplace. I needed to save every single possible HR professional in the entire world from doing any of this stuff. I needed to let every single HR professional, every single HR director, I needed to let every single person in every single organisation know that burnout wasn't their fault, that this thing that we were experiencing, this exhaustion, this stress, this constant need to prove and push, and this whole kind of hustling for our worth, the fact that we feel guilty about resting, the fact, all of this stuff, the stuff that I'd kind of been doing in small little doses, just kind of talking to a few people, then it became the, we've got to do something to stop this. But I fell into this empowerment trap, this trap of convincing myself that it was my job to fix what broke me. And for years, I continued with that exhaustion. Now, burnout can take years to recover from, but I really slowed mine because I just replaced kind of one mission. I just replaced one lot of busyness with another lot of busyness. Now, workload alone and busyness alone isn't enough to get us to the point of burnout. But toxicity minus our sense of self is. And if that busyness, that stress, that constant working, the guilt that's fueled by rest, if that becomes toxic, that's where busyness and stress and hustle and not resting, that's where it causes us to lose our sense of self. And it's those two combined that get us to that point of burnout. And I could see at that point that the system was broken, but also I was prolonging the burnout that I was in. I was falling back into a bit of the productivity cult because I thought, I need to then be falling into this. I was also in a little bit of the kind of positivity poisoning that we talked about again two or three weeks ago. Trying to stay positive, I've got to be the one to fix it, this is where we've got to go. I was also stuck in this breakthrough burnout that again we covered even more weeks ago before, right? But having these aha moments, this is the thing that I need to do. I need to write the next book. I need to do the next program. I need to do the next thing. I need to do the next thing. I need to do the next thing. Oh, there's another aha moment. There's another light bulb moment. That's the thing that I now need to do because that's how I'm going to change the world. I just kept falling into kind of trap after trap after trap. And again, like these are why I think these, for me anyway, these truths are so important because we can give the high level. I can talk to you about the burnout equation once and you think, yeah, Kelly, we get that. But it's this lived experience. It's the lived experience and the stories and the dot joining. It's this that I think is going to make the difference. And with a lot of these 200 truths that I talk to you, I think the reason that they're so important, like I've lived it and I know when I'm talking on stages, I know when I'm working one-to-one with clients, I know when I'm delivering the Burnout Aware Coach or the Master Burnout Coach, I know that these things aren't just my story. They're not just things that happen to me. I know they're part of the system, part of the systemic reason that so many of us are ending up at burnout. I know they're part of the toxicity. And yet lots of us don't recognize them because, again, we're still misunderstanding and miscommunicating what burnout is. And we think, oh, that's not burnout. And so we don't really make the changes that we need to make, right? Because we think, well, that's not it. Or somebody's selling us how to, you know, how to recover from burnout in 15 minutes in just 15 days. And we buy that thing. And then 15 days later, we've been doing the 15 minutes every day and it's not made any difference to us whatsoever. And then we think either it couldn't be burnout. There must be something else wrong with us. Or again, we think that we're the problem. Or clearly it didn't work for me because I'm the broken one. This was never going to work for me because I've got, like, I'm the issue. Like, I'm truly broken. I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. Maybe I didn't do it right. Well, maybe it's for everybody else, but not me. And we continue to fall into this trap. So again, when I'm talking about this stuff, I know my story and my lived experience isn't just my story and my lived experience. I know how it shows up in all of you. And having coached over 700 leaders over the last decade, having trained coaches from 14 countries in burnout awareness and master burnout coaching, I know how this plays out. I'm having these conversations every single day. And I know what it's like to live it and breathe it and be it. And that's why this stuff matters to me. I know that some of you listening to this, based on some of the messages again that I've been getting, I know that some of you are still out there trying to convince yourself that it's your job to fix everything. You've got to fix all of the systems and all of the processes. You've got to fix all of the workplaces. You've got to fix the sector. You've got to, I know it. I see it. I've been there. And you can create change, and you have to, you do whatever it is that you want to do in your own way. And I know that there is a different way of doing it. I genuinely thought I needed to fix the entire HR profession. And over the last 5 or 6 years, I've had to say, I can't work purely with HR. Because the will and the want and the drive to change isn't there. Now, again, some of that is because the systems are broken, but I can't continue to push myself to exhaustion for people that work in a sector that will never, ever put themselves first, that cancel last minute, that, you know, that are ghosting continuously. Now, that's not all of you. I know some of you that listen to this still work within that sector. And I know you listen to this. I know that's not you. But that's what I was being met with. Short notice cancellations, people not showing up, people changing, because the thinking was everybody else in the organisation matters more than I do. I also have been at a point where I think I've got to stop the entire world reaching burnout. Right? I need to do the coaching, the training, the qualifications. So I've got to stop everybody. I need to speak on all of the stages. I need to be doing all of the training. I need to be in every single workplace, doing everything that I possibly can to stop burnout. And yet when I created the Burnout Aware Coach and the Master Burnout Coach training, it's not my job to fix it all. I can't fix everything. But what I can do is start to create some momentum that then causes a ripple effect. And so for me, this is coaching. And I saw there's a woman who I saw do a post the other week. She's like, I'm going to impact 1 billion people. And I was like, you're not going to impact 1 billion people. I can't remember the exact numbers. If I get this wrong, bear with me. But I think it's this. She's worked out during her business, if she can impact 10,000 people, and each of those 10,000 people, for argument's sake, works with 135 people, that gets her to 1 billion. Somebody may need to do the maths on that one for me to say if I've just lied about the numbers or misunderstood the numbers. Numbers are not my strong point, but that from memory is what I saw her talk about a few weeks ago, and I should have written it down. So maybe somebody do the maths on that one for me and tell me if I've got it right. But that's the thing. So imagine if I could train 10,000 burnout aware coaches, 10,000 master burnout coaches, 10,000 people that buy Burnout 101. Imagine if there were 10,000 people from my business and each of those, for argument's sake, had an impact with 135 people. If we could stop burnout through a ripple effect to reach 1 billion people, and those 135 then reach 135 that then reach 135 that then reach 135. Burnout ends with awareness. But I had to realize I can't stop every single person getting to burnout. That's where I'd got to. I need to be the one that stops every single person getting to burnout, right? I have to save everybody. That's not my job. It's not my job to fix everything. I had to really kind of hone in on, mine is around the awareness and education. And then I took that even smaller and said, this is what I'm doing for coaches. If I can train burnout aware coaches that will create the ripple effect, if I can train the master burnout coaches that will create the ripple effect, that for me is how we create the change. I don't need to work with every single person on the planet in order to implement burnout. I just need to be able to find the people that will reach the people that will create the change. So if you've fallen into the empowerment trap thinking that need to be the one to fix an entire sector or your entire organisation on your own, then you've fallen into this empowerment trap. Take a breath. I'm going to leave you with that one for today. Again, if you do not already have your podcast companion, head to the website kellyswingler.com/podcast, get your podcast companion. You can write all of your notes episodes, you can keep them all in one place, unless of course you've got a bright shiny new notebook. Maybe you've got a podcast notebook where you do some of this. Maybe you just listen and then think, I'm going to listen to the next podcast. Maybe you don't do anything else. But that has been the Empowerment Trap, Burnout Truth number 17. This is Burnoutology, the podcast, with me, your host, Kelly Swingler. If you haven't, also get yourself to the website, get your copy of the Burnout Aware Coach. Get started that way. Don't get your copy of the Burnout Aware Coach. The Burnout Aware Coach is my 2-day training. The next one of which is the 26th and 27th of November. That's not what I meant to say to you. I meant to say, get your Burnout Aware Starter Kit if you haven't already. You'll find that on kellyswingler.com as well. You can either click on the Start Here tab or you'll find it on the homepage. So go and download your free Burnout Aware Starter Kit to be able to start your journey. I'm going to say thank you very much for listening. This has been Burnout Truth number 7, the Empowerment Trap. What it really means is convincing yourself it's your job to fix what broke you. How to spot it comes like, maybe I manifested this, or what am I doing wrong? And why it matters is because you're not broken, but the system is. Next week, we're going to be talking about nervous system chic. That is Burnout Truth number 18. That's what I'm going to be talking to you about next week. Nervous system chic. I will see you again, or I'll speak to you again next week. Go and have an amazing week. Take care for now. Bye-bye.